You are listening to Currency of Style Podcast, episode number 4. Welcome to Currency of Style Podcast. I am your host, Eva Kelly. This podcast is about supporting women rise in their career, encouraging you to reach for new opportunities and to find more success by elevating your style. Today on the podcast, we have Margaret Dominguez from NASA, who's going to share her experience with us in her role at NASA. We're so happy to have you here, Margaret. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to speak with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity and I'm excited to be here.
Margaret, going back to when you were in university and, you know, the idea of working in tech, where did it come from or when did it happen?
Well, so I think it started a little bit before. I'm originally from Mexico. I was born and raised in a small town in the southern part of Mexico called Tecamachalco, Puebla. And I was always really interested in math. And I was very fortunate. I had parents that were supportive of me going down that track. And I had good teachers that inspired me. In Mexico, things are also a little bit different. Only about 5% of the population goes to college. So very, very few people even make it to university. So because of that, your last year of high school, you get sort of like an associate's degree, like a type of certification, because that allows you so that by the time you finish high school, you can have some sort of a certificate that allows you to be able to go into the job market. So even before you go to university, you sort of have to pick your track because the last year of high school, you're already taking specific classes for your track. And also, we don't have undecided track. You can't sort of start your first 2 years undecided and then figure out what you want to do. Once you go to university, you need to know and pick your major, you know, from the very first day. You're still young, you know, you're still trying to figure out. So obviously, a lot of people make mistakes. But I think because the system is made so that not so many people go, most of the time, people that get to that stage pretty much know. And also in my experience in this field, the people that are going into STEM specifically already know. You know, it's very rare that you find sort of like a straggler that is doing something else. I think people that go into STEM, they already know in high school that that's what they want. That's what they want to do. Maybe they don't know exactly, which was my case. So I remember when I finished high school, I wasn't sure if I wanted to do physics or math. You know, but it was something that I could still figure that out within the first year or two. I ended up picking physics from the get because I decided that I wanted to be a little bit more practical. And I felt that physics would allow me to do that. But again, I had all these things put in place that I didn't know were put in place. It just happened to work out, which was the support of my parents and good teachers in math that allowed me to do that, because I certainly see that with other people that have interests and their parents, you know, don't quite see a future, specifically for females, unfortunately, in STEM, you know, they won't be as supportive. So those are really important things that I had.
Definitely.
I mean, we grew up in a really small town. I was the first of four kids that my parents had. So, and I don't think they ever thought that, you know, either one of me or my sisters would go into a field like that. They were always, you know, really focused on getting us, you know, focused on school. And my dad said, your job is to, you know, to maintain your scholarship and get good grades. And that's what I want you to focus on, which was really lucky. And we were really blessed to have that opportunity. But we didn't know anybody really that was a physics major. Like nowadays, because of LinkedIn, which is how we connected, which has become, you know, the way that professionals all around the world can connect. I have students from different countries that have reached out through LinkedIn and say, hey, Margaret, I want to know what to do to work at NASA. And I can set up a call with them, right? And it's really easy to do. And I'm happy to have that. But that did not exist at all, right? I mean, growing up in this small town, we didn't even have a library. I never knew, you know, a scientist or an engineer. The conditions also in Mexico are not super favorable for education. So the fact that my parents, without knowing, you know, sort of just being optimistic, I remember my dad said, physics will help you answer all the questions of the universe. Sort of looking at it like really romantically, right? Because I mean, I think that specifically with space and astronomy, people sort of have like this romantic idea of space, you know, and it's sort of enchanting. And my mom was like, you know, you're going to be able to do this because I believe in you. So just those things without them knowing, just having sort of that faith.
Yeah.
I was blessed that it led me here.
At what point did you decide you'd love to work at NASA? Was that ever on your radar or when did it come in?
Definitely not on my radar. I grew up in a pig farm. You know, I mean, I thought I wanted to do something in STEM. I didn't even know what STEM was. I only had my program at my university. My graduating class was nine physics students. And they've tried to close down the physics program because there's just very little demand. And my class, they called us the miracle class, because most of the time you only had like two students be enrolled in a year. So the program was tiny, tiny. But because we were tiny, we sort of had like this really nice connection. And I was very involved in all the activities that were happening. So I was a member of the student chapter, our local little chapter within the university, of the physics and mathematics. And we organized a physics conference. And one of the speakers at our conference was an astrophysicist that still works here at NASA. And he came, he gave his talk. It was the most well-attended talk. We were able to get a sponsorship from a national bank, which was amazing. And we hosted the conference with 300 people that came from all over the country, which was also really ridiculous and amazing. And this astrophysicist from NASA came and he gave a talk. And geographically, because the airport is 2 hours away from the city and all the speakers had escorts, I happened to be assigned to be his escort. So we had a driver and I was just sitting there with him for 2 hours on the ride from the university to the airport. So of course I was terrified. I'm like, what am I going to talk to this amazing guy about for 2 hours? And he was so nice, so professional, so, you know, just to give me the chance to learn all the things that I didn't know. So he asked me if I had ever considered working at NASA. And of course I had never considered that. And I remember he had a printed schedule of all the activities, you know, it's like flight schedule or whatever. And he wrote down at the bottom of the paper, you know, really one liner, and it's like a website. And he's like, check this website. He teared, you know, a tiny strip of paper. And he's like, and apply for an internship and let's see what happens. We organized our conference in February of 2008. That was the beginning of my journey to NASA.
That's so special. It was like destiny being in the car with that man.
Absolutely.
So basically, then you did this internship, I presume.
Yes.
Was there someone at that internship then who inspired you further?
Yes, I did physics and I knew I wanted to go to grad school. I knew I wanted to get a PhD. I didn't know exactly what it meant. I just knew that I wanted to continue to study. And the thing that you studied was called a PhD. So then without knowing much, which is nowadays, now I sort of try to educate so that people do know that they have that option and try to understand what that is. Nobody explained that to me. Nobody in my family had a PhD, so it was just something foreign. I applied for the internship that summer. I got accepted, which was amazing. And they placed me in the optics branch. And I really didn't know what optics was, and I didn't know, you know, what they did. But I fell in love. The people were amazing. The work was amazing. And the guy that ended up being my boss graduated from University of Arizona College of Optical Sciences. And he said, if you're going to study optics, this is where you have to go. So I applied to the program. I was also really lucky because they admitted me right away and offered me a 3-year fellowship, which was amazing. So then it made my decision really easy. I was going to apply to other programs and I just left and did that. That part was a little bit hard because I sort of had to get up and leave. You know, I had always been in Mexico living with my family. I had done an exchange program, but I knew I was coming back. And I sort of knew that after I graduated college, I'd be able to go do something else, but I didn't know what that was or where that was going to be. So sort of this was like the PhD program and I was going to be, and because they admitted me so fast and they gave me the funding so fast, which was absolutely a blessing. In Mexico, to graduate college, you sort of have to do a defense like you do a PhD. So I had to have a defense for my physics degree. And I defended in December, the first week of December of 2009, and I started the PhD program the second week of January of 2010. So it happened very, very quickly. I didn't know anybody there, you know, in the city, which was waiting for me with my funding. And the internet wasn't what it is now. So even finding a place to live was not as straightforward as it is now. But things just started happening. And I remember when I got the email from University of Arizona that I was admitted and that I could start in a few weeks. And I remember talking to my mom, and I'm her first child to do that. And she was so calm. And she's like, she just held me and she's like, you have to do this. You have to go and, you know, sort of start your own thing. So again, going back to like the importance of having that support from your family, you know, even if my mom didn't know what is going to happen and my dad didn't know what would happen, just them believing makes such a huge difference.
It definitely does come from the family, that initial support. Yeah, I mean, teachers can also support alongside that, but I think it really needs to be in the family first. But that's so cool. Your parents have no background in science and they just need to encourage you in this way. And it's amazing. And then destiny took over as everything fell into place. So tell me about your current role at NASA.
So I actually just got promoted this week. I am now the associate brand head. Thank you.
Oh my God, amazing. Okay, so before this week, you were optical engineer. Is that right?
And I still am an optical engineer, but now in addition to being an optical engineer, I'm also what we call an associate branch head. So the optics branch and every branch that we have here at NASA Goddard is sort of like a specialized section. So within optics, we have sort of supervisors or managers, as you'd call them. So now I became one of these associate managers for the branch. I just started yesterday. This is my first week. So I still am figuring out what exactly that means. I applied for the position. So this is something I wanted to do. I had to apply and be interviewed, and it was a competitive process. I am still an optical engineer because I will remain half-time at a role that I've had, you know, up until now. And I'll continue to work on the Roman Space Telescope, which is what I've been working on for years. But the other half of my time will be spent now on these supervisory managerial roles that will help the branch, is my hope.
Amazing. Congratulations. So can you explain more about the Raman telescope?
Yes, it's so exciting actually to be working on this. So I'm sure you've heard of the James Webb Space Telescope because it's been all over the news. There's all these images out there. We also launched it at Christmas of last year. So it was also sort of like, you know, a big thing happening on a big holiday that a lot of people just sort of paid attention. Then we had the first images come out, the President Biden, you know, advertised from the White House. So we've had so much visibility, which is amazing because we don't always have that level of visibility. So the Roman Space Telescope is the successor, we call the successor to the James Webb Space Telescope. That means it's going to, along the line of astrophysics, going to try to answer questions in the nature of astrophysics, and specifically is going to try to focus on answering what is dark matter. That is what a scientist all over the world decided that this decade is one of the important questions to answer. So we sort of build something that will allow us to answer that question. This is a telescope, which is an optical instrument. It's going to be about the size of a bus. And it's going to be 1.5 million kilometers away from our planet, and it's going to be orbiting the sun. It's going to be in the same general location as James Webb, but it's much smaller than James Webb. And we're going to launch it in 5 years.
Wow, so impressive. I'm sure when people hear you work for NASA, they're blown away. I mean, it is, I think, one of the ultimate jobs for a person in STEM or tech. So now you'll move into more management of people. Is it always kind of like a division where you choose to go deeper into tech or else managing people?
Yeah, so you can sort of have the option. And I went a little bit back and forth. I remember thinking, if I'm going to get a PhD, I'm always going to stay technical. Because I was like, it's going to take so long that I just want to become fully technical. This has sort of given me the chance to try this out. I can stay in this position 2 years if I want to continue after that. I can, or I can go back to doing full-time what I'm doing. So it will allow me to sort of try this out. in my years that I've been here at NASA, I've always sort of been a little bit curious, you know, what more can I do? What's especially interesting was that I can still do both. I can still do the technical work and then try out this managerial thing. And it is common that we have associate branch heads that do both. So I really like that I could do that, because up until now, I'll spend so many hours in the lab, in a clean room, building instrumentation, testing, you know, putting things together, taking them apart, and just developing methodology for us to be able to do this. So I really enjoy that, and I don't want to give this up. But, you know, there's also the days where I'm like, I really would like to try something a little bit different. So I think this is going to enable me to yeah. just sort of expand my horizons and then decide once I have more knowledge what I want to continue.
I mean, some people are cut out for the management role, and I can completely see you are one of those people. I mean, you're really good with people, and you're a really good leader, and you're really natural in that role.
Thank you.
Was it at all challenging being a woman in tech through your career so far?
Sometimes, yes. I think all women in tech. I do want to say, however, that I've heard, you know, what I consider horror stories from other women that have had just experiences that I've just been like, how is this happening? And then at the same time, just realize how lucky I am that I've been in an environment where people respect me. And certainly early on, when I had just come here and I was still finishing my undergraduate degree in Mexico, I was always insecure, right? Because I'm like, I have these colleagues that have been working at NASA for 20 years that are experts. And here I am, this Mexican from the pig farm. What does she know? And how can she do? And sort of all these, my mom calls them hangups, but just sort of like, you know, these barriers that we put ourselves. So sometimes, you know, we'll make mistakes, I think, because we sort of mess ourselves up because we become more insecure and we think somebody's thinking something, but nobody knows what the other person is thinking, right? We're just thinking about it. I have had colleagues, you know, make comments about the way that I dress and the way that I do things that I think maybe is more because I am a girl and because I'm Mexican, and there's some, you know, some things like that that are a little bit culturally different. And, you know, I've had to learn to realize that it doesn't matter, right? Because ultimately I'm here and I'm doing my job. And the reality is that the job speaks for itself, and the work that I've done has been successful, and we've completed really important milestones, and we've delivered instrumentation, which has been amazing. And then, you know, whatever ideas they had, you know, those ideas will change. Now, sometimes that's not so easy because some environments can be more toxic than others. It's always a challenge coming from different sides, especially NASA. We're really a diverse organization. So we do have people coming from different countries and different cultures and different languages. So that, I think, enables us to be a little bit more welcoming, because you have different people that are overcoming different things. And overall, the culture at NASA is very accepting. We're also a federal organization, so we have a lot of, not rules, but logistics that we need to follow, that we're encouraged to follow, which is also really good. And it makes it so that it's a safer environment. And if you're not comfortable, or if something upsets you, there are things in place so that you can anonymously complain or express something if you're afraid of not being able to speak up directly. So I think, unfortunately, you know, there's still issues generational wise. Also, the people that I had most issues with were normally older men. And then the new generations, you know, we have different ideas. So I think we're sort of seeing that change that happens naturally with time. But sometimes it's a little slow.
Yeah, it does feel still quite slow. And there is still that gender pay gap, which is a difficult one. To think that it still exists is a bit crazy.
Yes. Yeah. I do have to say, though, that because this is a federal agency, the gender pay gap is almost zero. So in the private sector, it's a little bit easier to have that, because, you know, you have to sort of prove different things. Been in the federal government. So my husband actually works at NASA and has, you know, a PhD in optics as well. And we don't work together exactly, but we work in the same department and we work with similar people, and we get paid the same actually. So because it is the federal government and it's a little bit more transparent, sort of like you have these credentials, check, check, you're going to be paid this amount. So it's a little bit more transparent. So it enables that pay gap to be less, but that's very much still true in the private sector.
What are the least enjoyable parts of your job?
Different parts of it, right? So some days, the technical challenges, whenever something doesn't work, and it seems like trying to achieve something and the instrument doesn't work or it's out of calibration. But then, of course, there's just the reality of life that sometimes the issue are just people, right? And miscommunication. And I think that's something that everybody can understand, because it doesn't matter what field you're in. You always have that one colleague that you just can't communicate with. And it feels like you're saying something and the other person doesn't quite hear you. And I think that's one of the hardest parts, especially you can imagine, in a big organization like NASA, we're working across multiple disciplines. So sometimes, a word in optics doesn't mean the same in mechanical or in electrical engineering. So making sure that, what I'm saying is understood by this other person, and it doesn't always make sense. I think that's the hard part, but the good part there is that eventually, if you are at it enough, you do get to go to the other side where you then learn, how people and the other side are thinking about it. So I think the hard part is just pushing through the patient process where you have to go through those difficult days of miscommunication so that you make it to the other side and can be successful, hopefully.
Yeah. Looking back over your career, what would you say is one of your highlights, one of your greatest achievements?
Well, so 2 months ago, when I started working at NASA, which is now almost 14 years ago, but actually not when I started right away. When I started, I was working on James Webb. But 8 years ago, I started working on this component on the Roman Space Telescope. That was part of my PhD dissertation. And 2 months ago, we finished it. We completed the instrument and we delivered it to the next phase of the project. And that was a massive milestone. I was in the clean room for like a week straight with my colleagues, very, very long days. But the completion of this thing that I've been working on for 8 years full time as part of my PhD and being done, and it worked and it was doing exactly what it was supposed to do. And we put it on it and we turned other things around it and it was acting like exactly what it was supposed to do. It was amazing. It happened 2 months ago. And to me, it feels like it just happened because it's been something that I've been working on for 8 years. And we just released yesterday a picture of it on the NASA website. It's called GRISM, which is one of the components of the wide field instrument on the Roman Space Telescope.
Amazing. So exciting. Say one of our listeners really wants a promotion. Would you have any tips or advice for them on how they should go about getting promoted?
Speak up. And I have to say it multiple times because I have to say it for myself. I have conversations with my husband where he tells me all the time, he's like, if I could jump in your skin, I'd be doing so many more things, because he notices how sometimes I hold back because I want to be more cautious and I want to be more analytical. And he's like, just do it. He's like, if I was in your shoes, I would have already, been asking, been doing. So I think, it's a phenomena that we see with women in general, unfortunately, that we sort of question ourselves a little bit more. And certainly now I'm much better at this than I was 5 years ago, but I have to remind myself to speak up and advocate for myself because, I have my husband that now advocates for me. And certainly my colleagues that have seen me will advocate for me, but there's no better advocate than yourself, right? And I have to be able to advocate for myself. So ask for that promotion, ask those questions. And if you're not ready for that, maybe you'll get that answer. But, sometimes we make assumptions and those assumptions can be really hurtful just because, it's ignorance, right? You can't know what you don't know. So if you don't ask it, you won't be able to know.
Have you ever gone for a promotion and been turned down?
Because I was a student for so long, I had to sort of finish my degree in order to be able to explore the next thing. And I defended my PhD now almost 4 years ago. But because I was so focused on getting this part done, even after I defended my PhD, I didn't want to work on anything else until we completed this. So I was sort of very goal-oriented. So that's why when I knew that this promotion came up and I was going to finish the GRISM, I was like, this is the right time for me to apply for this promotion. So I was fortunate because I was given the opportunity, but I'm sure that that is coming where I will apply for something and they'll say no. And I'm really hopeful that I'll be able to learn from that so that I can apply that to the next thing.
Yeah. Do you feel style plays a role in how you show up at your work?
I would like to say yes. I'd like to think that, you know, everybody has a style. In Mexico, just culturally, girls start wearing makeup as young as 16. It's just part of the culture. That's just how you do things. So I've been wearing makeup for a long time. It's just something I like to do and I grew up doing. So it's something I've always had. And I've had colleagues that are like, oh, how can you see with the mascara? And I'm like, I don't
know.
And then like shoes, you know, I cannot wear very high heels. Certainly I don't have the skill to last for long, but I do wear a little bit of heels. So my colleagues always hear me coming down the hallway and they, Margaret, I can hear you coming. So that's okay. I mean, they know that in addition to walking in heels, I can also be, you know, a competent optical engineer. So that's fine. Those things don't have to be one or the other. So to me, it's important. I want to make sure, you know, I do my makeup and I do my hair and I pick out what I want to wear the previous day, because that's important to me. And oftentimes, whenever I'm ready to give a talk, I'll spend hours, of course, developing the material that I'm going to use. But for sure, the day before, I'll spend like an hour picking out what I'm going to wear. And that's just sort of my way of mentally getting ready for that. So for me, it means a lot because it's just part of how I express myself. And I feel more confident doing so.
Yeah. Would you describe a typical day in your job?
So now with my new promotion, I get to attend a lot of meetings. So that I have to get used to. But if you would have asked me last week, I would have been like everybody else in the world, spending a lot of time in my computer, just checking emails, communicating with my colleagues, planning out activities. About half of my time, I would be in the lab. So the lab today is in the basement. So I would be in there for hours, putting some tests together, taking measurements, and then sending those measurements to my computer so that then I can do analysis, writing a report, and then potentially presenting that in a meeting with my colleagues. So a combination of emails and meetings, time in the lab, which I really like, and just going through that whole circle of, you know, creating the experiment, doing the experiment, doing the analysis, writing the report. And we really like to focus on documentation here at NASA. So we like to publish and we like to share so that whatever lessons we learn, we continue to share them so other people can learn from them.
Yeah. It really sounds like a beautiful career for a person in STEM. You have the analytical side, the experimental side, the presenting and the communication with your teammates. It's, as I say, the ultimate job, I think, for someone who has a background in physics. Or material science. When I was doing my material science PhD at Oxford, material science undergrads organized this industrial trip to California. We went to see applied materials, and one of the places we got to see was the Ames Research Labs at NASA. So it was a really fantastic experience, and I think they don't normally open their labs up to the public, so we were very lucky. But it was part of the whole Oxford undergraduate industrial visit. And myself and my friend who were PhDs at the time, we thought, why not? Let's get to see inside NASA and these other fantastic places. Margaret, I just want to ask you in summary, what three pieces of advice would you offer to women in the workplace, especially women in STEM, who want to succeed like you have?
So I think I'm going to go back and say, speak up again. You know, definitely be proactive about whatever you want. Go and have those conversations, reach out. So speak up in any way, you know, verbally and physically. And almost just as important, be patient. Be patient with yourself. Be patient with stuff that's happening around us. You know, there's so much, especially I think one of the things the pandemic taught us is that sometimes things can be too much and we just need to be patient. And, you know, maybe I thought I was ready to do something and in the process, I realize that I can't. And that's okay. Maybe this is just not the right time. So be patient with yourself, because I remind myself of that all the time. And the third thing, because it's very tied to my personality, is plan. I love to plan. I'm a planner. I'm an organizer. Sometimes it can be too much, people tell me. But it's mostly served me well, and it's served me well for the work that I've done. If I have a plan, I can see, you know, what's missing in the plan. And also the patient part comes back, because it's like sometimes plans change and that's okay. But sort of having that idea of what you want to achieve, you know, more or less having thought about it, to me, it's been really helpful, because it gives me sort of confidence, you know, like I know how I'm going to get there more or less, and it'll be okay. And I'll figure out some of the details along the way.
Yeah, exactly. Those are fantastic tips. You want to do whatever you can to pull that confidence to its maximum within yourself, I think. And, you know, if planning is the way, that's fantastic. For me, it might be style and wearing that outfit that I feel great in. And your other pieces of advice have been excellent to speak up. I think as women, we need reminders of this daily. Margaret, thank you so much for speaking with us. I've never had this type of insight into what it's like to work at NASA and in your role as optical engineer / is it associate manager, you said?
Associate branch head.
Again, thank you very, very much. And I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you, Eva. I appreciate the opportunity. So happy to be able to talk about the work that we do in NASA and with a little twist today. So I enjoyed that.
Hey, if you are ready to get that promotion, I want to invite you to work with me one-on-one for 6 weeks. My unique combination of style, confidence, and career coaching gets results. We start with style, because when you feel great in what you are wearing, you're ready to stand in your own true power. My goal is to see you succeed, so you either get that promotion or I give you your 1K back. Just head over to www.currencyofstyle.com/workwithme. I'll see you there.